Welcome to The Art of Semi-Fiction. I am Robin Miller.
And I'm Jane Daly.
Today we are going to be talking about what role does truth have in fiction?
Ooh, that sounds really good, Robin.
So I'm hearing some kind of rumbling in the fiction crowd that are not necessarily convinced that truth has any part of fiction. Fiction is all just made up stuff.
Right.
So we're going to talk about that, dispel that myth today. So first of all, Jane, I want you to give me a guesstimate as a fiction writer, half fiction writer, how much of your descriptions, your character outlines, settings, all that stuff is actually based on truth.
Wow.
I didn't tell her I was going to ask her this question, so I can see the little wheels turning.
95%.
Wow.
And let me tell you why. So the very first novel I ever wrote, which has as of yet not been published, I wrote it thinking of a friend's house that I had that I knew when I was a kid. It's based in her house, in her neighborhood, and I know every detail of what the inside of her house looks like. Mm-hmm. And that's the only thing is that in my book, it was all, everything had doilies, and her mom was not a doily person. But the interior of the home, the exterior, the yard, the neighborhood, was all true.
It was all true. Well, I didn't expect you to go 95%, but you're proving my point. I appreciate that, considering we didn't rehearse that in any way. Okay, do you think it is fully possible to develop any of those, so setting, character, anything, story, without using some modicum of truth, some fragments of truth? Do you think it's possible?
No. Categorically, no.
I like that.
How can you, when you really can only write from what you know? I mean, they say write what you know.
Yeah.
Even though we pretty much write what we don't know. But when you think about any place that you're going to use as a setting, you have to have some sort of knowledge about that setting. Or you can't write about it. I could not write about what it was like to live in England because I've not lived in England. But I have lived here.
Exactly. So you can't just put here with a British accent. That doesn't work, does it?
No.
No, it doesn't.
Throw in a few British terms like knackered and all that.
Exactly.
It's not going to work.
That's rubbish. I love that. So do you think then, if you're telling me that 95% of your fiction is based in truth somehow, and you're telling me that you don't think it's categorically, you don't think it's possible to develop any of those, the character development, setting, all of those things without relying on facts, truth. Do you think it's possible for someone to write a work of fiction and not have any basis in fact? Do you think it's even possible for somebody to be so creative that they write something that it's literally coming out of, it's the first time the world has ever seen it, the first time we've been exposed to that information? Is it possible to do that without relying on truth? Is it even possible?
Well, let's think about that, because let's talk about fantasy. When a writer is creating a world that doesn't currently exist, where does the truth come in?
Oh, I can tell you that. Is that a question for me?
That's a question for
pick
you.
Pick me, Miss Daly, because I have the answer to that one.
Okay.
If that goes back to something that we've talked about before, plot being what happens, and the where, the setting, and the story being the emotional journey.
Okay.
So even if you're on planet Zargon, right? Number one, you're already on a planet.
Ooh.
Right?
Ooh, and there are planets.
So already we're drawing on the truth.
Now you have 1% truth.
We got that. There's going to be a society. There's going to be relationship. There's going to be characters. There's going to be dynamics. There might be family units. There might be reproduction of these, whatever Zargon units are. You know, so we're drawing on things that we know. Like if you look at, have you read C.S. Lewis's Out of the Silent Planet, and you know, or
I've only read his nonfiction.
What I was going to say is. Oh my gosh, like Roald, I don't know if this is appropriate for a literary podcast, but Roald Dahl's, you know, The Great Glass Elevator and The Pernicious Canids. Did you read that as a kid? Okay.
No.
Okay, well, he writes about a world, the Great Glass Elevator that comes out of the chocolate factory at the end of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, goes up into the atmosphere, and he's talking about stuff that happens out there.
Okay.
But in order to have it be something that we understand, everything has a frame of reference, even if it's different. It's kind of like what you just said about when I moved to England. The first time I moved to England, I had only ever been there for a 2-week vacation prior to moving there, mm-hmm. the first time that I lived there. And it all looked the same. There's buildings and there's cars and there's people who have clothing on and go to jobs and, you know, there's supermarkets. But it was such a different culture. It was so weird. I got to the point of not wanting to speak to people because if you say the wrong word, a word that is completely innocent in America is obnoxiously inappropriate in England and vice versa. So I just felt like I was unsettled. I felt like I was on a ship that was just going.
You know, I felt the same way when we moved to rural Montana.
We have drawn that similarity, haven't we? Well, but yeah, it's true. Culturally, it's different.
I came from Sacramento, which is a huge population, and we have sidewalks and we have streets.
Suburbs. And
to go to a place that the population was 450, and there were no sidewalks, and there was a lot of dirt roads.
And not a lot of theater or wine bars or whatever.
There was a tiny, tiny library.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was, I could write about that because that was truth to me. I could write about the struggles of a California girl being in a rural area and having suspicion.
But you're still drawing on what you knew in both places.
Exactly. But you probably couldn't write about living in Montana because you haven't lived there.
No, I'd have to transfer my experience with living rurally in other places that I have. But I couldn't say I know exactly what Montana is like. And also you have to recognize it's kind of like when I lived in England, I felt like the California Chamber of Commerce because I live in Northern California and I live in the mountains. And most people think of California as LA and beach kind of thing, right?
Most people in Montana think of that.
So I got into that conversation with a lot of people. England fits more than 3 times into California. It's 65,000 square miles. 50,000 square miles. California is 165,000 square miles, so it's more than 3 times the size of England, but all of California is the same person. We all know stars. We all live on the beach. We all have convertibles and take our dogs to acupuncture, you know, right? So all I can write about is my experience in Northern California. You know, my family is from the North Coast, but I also live now kind of near Lake Tahoe. So those are my experiences, right? Living in England, I lived in a very unique part of England in that it was not like a lot of the rest of England. Mm-hmm. So even though my experience I can write about, I can only write about it really from the perspective of my 10 years living in Norfolk in East Anglia. So my point in those questions is, I don't think it's possible for us to write fiction without drawing on elements that we have to be able to have our readers understand what we're writing about. If that story, whatever the story is, even if we're going to the planet Zargon, if they are, if it's a romance on planet Zargon, you know, we're talking about the emotion of love or courtship or whatever, you know, or if, you know, Zargon's in peril because the Iggy wits are coming to, you know, blow it up for their, you know, whatever, you know, they need the gas resources or whatever it is. We still are relying on cultural norms of maybe government or relationship or family units or societal structure, whether it's a tribe or a...
So you're talking about then is universal truths.
Yeah.
Things that are true no matter if it's fantasy, if it's a romance, if it's literary fiction, whatever it happens to be.
It's basically, we have to have a structure that we recognize as readers to understand the story, so understand the emotional journey. Like, we've all heard the things, you know, in some cultures you slurp your noodles to show that it's delicious, and in other cultures your mother will smack you, you know, for doing that.
It's okay to eat with your fingers.
Exactly.
Whereas here it's absolutely not.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, there's cultural norms, and of course there's going to be differences. But I think that there's two kinds of truths. One is we have to have some cultural, societal, relational structure that our readers understand. Otherwise, we don't get it. Why you can't write a story about a man who steps on every mushroom unless you know that culture, that's how they prove their manhood. You know, the number of whatever, you know, unless you give the reason behind that. Mm-hmm. And then we understand, oh, well, we don't step on mushrooms to prove manhood. But in our culture,
we send men off to war.
Exactly. Or they're, you know, they're tough baseball, soccer, football players, whatever. So we have to be able to transfer it, but in our mind as a writer, we know that there's that truth, right? Even though we're couching it differently, we're presenting it differently. The coming of age might look differently in a Native American tribe than it does in an African tribe versus downtown London, you know. But there's always going to be that understanding that kids come of age, right? And what does that look like? And whatever could be different, but we know the basics of the truth. So there are some frameworks.
How did they come of age in your planet Zargon?
How they do it is not writing for once they can write a best-selling novel, they are considered adults in planet Argo.
Wow.
Exactly. But besides that, those structural things, the structural, societal, cultural things we're talking about, it's the emotions too, right? If you say a word that means nothing to Americans or whoever your audience is, and you say my planet Zargot is experiencing, you know, flubby flurry. If we don't know what that is, and we can't say, oh, that's like feeling insecure in a group of people, so you're feeling that prepubescent kind of angst or whatever, or loneliness, or if we can't tie that into something, that story will mean nothing to us.
And those are some of those universal truths that are in fiction.
Yes.
That we have relationships. We know that we struggle in relationships. We have parental issues. We have child issues. We have friend issues. We have environmental issues.
Exactly. And the result of having those truths, whatever they are, however we're presenting them, that we can connect with, that's where we track with the story. Mm-hmm. So we can go to planet Zargon. But if there's the great love story of the ages in planet, you know, then we're tracking with it. It doesn't matter that the you know, land's made of cheese and, you know, everybody is invisible or whatever it is, because we're tracking with the emotion of it. So I think when people say, oh, no, I just make everything up, I don't think you do. I think you just rearrange it.
Right.
Rearrange it beautifully, creatively, intuitively.
In many different ways.
Exactly. But you're just rearranging information that you have. So when you create a character, if you say, well, I'm creating a new character, and this character is a girl, well, already we have a frame of reference. Girls are a thing.
That's true. There's a truth right there.
I don't know culturally if that is going to be polite in the near future, but girls exist in my world. But then you can also say this girl's about 20. Well, 20 years, because we're talking about our way of you know, dealing with date and time and whatever. And you can say this person is insecure because she was raised without a parent and always made to feel like she didn't have any value. Well, now we're starting to say, but these are all real feelings. And maybe the person who's writing it wasn't an orphan or whatever, but maybe that the writer also did feel marginalized or unheard or unvalued. So now, even though we're rearranging the parts, so the orphan thing may be, well, I know there's orphans that exist. That's a real thing. And I felt angst, so I'm going to put part of me in there. And my brother really, really liked math, so this character is going to like math. And my friend Jane sucked stuff out of the middle of a cupcake, so we're going to put that character. So we're creating a new character.
Right.
Right? But it's all based on real stuff, mm-hmm. right?
Well, right. The people that we make up are really a composite of yeah. almost everyone we've known.
Yeah.
Or maybe someone who we want to be. Maybe our main character
yes.
is going to embody those characteristics of, I wish I was stronger. And so
yes.
I'm going to write this character who's really strong.
Yes. Would make, and if you, and, but that again, that's a beautiful way of using the truth. The truth is, I made a choice here to not be my best self. You know, I made a bad choice, but my character's not going to make the same mistake I did. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a,
or maybe the character's going to make the same mistake, but it's going to turn out differently.
Yes,
and I can make that up because I can change the course.
Yes,
I can change that.
God
course.
Bless
maybe
writing.
Maybe not in the truth, but in the book, I can change the course. And
yeah.
this is what it would have looked like if I wouldn't. If
God
I wouldn't
bless
have
writing.
Done that. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of the way that we bend the truth. But let's look at the practical benefits now. So if you are looking at using elements of truth, so we can take, well, we've been talking about characters, so let's talk. Do another one. How about a depiction of an emotion?
Okay.
So you've got a new character who you're writing about in a novel,
mm-hmm.
and this character, let's use Grace. Grace in Francine Rivers' book. She felt that her life choices were not great up to a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
And then she decided to make a change,
okay.
right? Even if the same choices that she had made that were wrong, or not, I'm not judging the fictional character Grace, but if her choices led to the emotion of feeling like she had wasn't being an honoring person, wasn't following God closely, wasn't whatever it was, didn't do the best by a child, whatever those choices that led up to that, maybe Francine had another experience where she felt that her choices did not result in who she wanted to be mm-hmm. at that time. So she may not have made the same choices as Grace, but she had the same emotion
mm-hmm.
as Grace.
So there's the truth.
There's the truth.
Therein lies the truth.
There. And so when we're talking about your character in your novel you're working on right now, you haven't had the exact experience of this woman, right? But a lot of things that you have experienced or walked closely with people who have experienced it are making its way in a composite character.
Mm-hmm.
So you're taking little elements of experiences you've had, experiences of people around you, and putting it into this character. So they're true elements coming up to make another whole.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, so the emotions and the choices, these are all things that have either I've experienced or we've seen other people experience, which
yep.
is the truth that is into fiction.
Exactly. And how I'm kind of envisioning this, I like food references, can you tell? Like them a lot. And how I think about this is if you look at the ingredients that you make several very different cuisines with. So let's look at tomatoes and onions and garlic, for example.
Okay.
That can go salsa Mexican. That can go Italian.
Mm-hmm.
That can go even Indian. That can go in many directions with those three ingredients. It's how you add to it, how you mix it, how you cook it,
mm-hmm.
how you chop it up.
What you add.
Exactly. So I think that that's the same thing. We take elements of truth, emotional truths that we've experienced or whatever. We add bits of character from somebody else, a circumstance from somewhere else, a setting from somewhere mm-hmm. else. And it's a new thing. It's a completely new thing. I don't think anybody would mistake spaghetti sauce for salsa, right? I'm hoping.
I
right?
hope not.
Or a curry. I'm hoping not.
Yeah.
You never know. But you see what I mean? It's
yeah.
the same ingredients. You just rearrange them differently. And I think that that's kind of the point. The benefit of doing that, the benefit of using that real emotion or a person that you know or a circumstance or a situation that you went through or a decision that you made, I think that just results in more complexity.
It makes your characters real.
Yeah.
In the novel that I was referring to that has not yet been published, and may never be published, who knows, one of the main characters, the older woman, was modeled after a pastor's wife that I knew. Mm. She was from South Africa, but she's not from South Africa in the book. But she's very tall. She's big boned. She's very merciful and full of grace.
Yeah.
And so I took those elements. I said, that's the perfect person to be the, what I call the Holy Spirit in the book, or the type of Christ in the book.
Yeah. And I think that that's the freedom that we have when we're looking at fiction. What role does that have? I think we've got to just acknowledge that it's there, mm-hmm. number one. But I think that one of the things I see, I guess one of the biggest issues I see in a lot of people that I work with who are fiction writers is that their characters are very one-dimensional.
Mm.
And it's kind of, I use the example of when you look at a sunset or you look at a cloud formation, it's stunning. It can be absolutely breathtaking. But if you try to paint that, it would just not look real. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just would never, ever do it justice, number one. But it also would look contrived, mm-hmm. right? So the real thing has more power and impact because you don't question it. It's mm-hmm. the real thing. And I think a lot of people, when they're writing a fictional character, they want their good guys to be completely good, and they want their bad guys to be completely bad, and they want to call it, good there. But the reality is, even the best, most wonderful people have their things that they struggle with.
And they make mistakes.
And somebody once told me, and I've used this example before, Jeffrey Dahmer was polite to some people, I mean...
before he ate them.
I mean, isn't that the funniest
true.
Thing?
No, it's true.
Is even the most unredeemable people seem to have redeemable qualities or something. Mm-hmm. And so if we use realism, if we really think about people that are in our lives, the fact is everybody's a complex character. And if we are able to take those truths and put them into our fictional characters, then instead of them being one-dimensional, they're going to be rich and complex.
Right. It's going to be a lot more fun to read.
Yes. And it's just going to be more compelling. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
So I hope we have settled it completely. All fiction has truth in it. Fiction should have truth in it.
Mm-hmm.
It will enrich your writing, make it more complex and compelling.
Right.
Have we settled that now?
I'm convinced.
All right. Good answer.
You all are convinced.
Good answer.
As well.
Good answer. You have been listening to The Art of Semi-Fiction. I am Robin Miller.
I'm Jane Daly.
And we are exploring every corner of the written word. I hope you will subscribe, and thank you all for listening.
Thank you.